This week's episode is brought to you by Groenfell Meadery, an open-source meadery. Head over to groenfell.com to try the recipes at home or order mead right to your door at groenfell.com/store. I was recently able to get my hands on some mead from Groenfell, and it is as delicious as I remembered. In fact, we had a socially distanced dinner at some friends the other night, and I brought some of the Hop Swarm, which is a dry hopped mead, and it went very well with homemade apple pie. Ricky the Mead Maker says, be on the lookout for Wild Hunt, a spiced cranberry and blood orange mead. He says it's out of this world. That's at groenfell.com/store. That's GroenFell. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 3rd, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, beekeeper Caleb Hutcherson talks about his work in capturing bees from wild swarms and people's houses. Caleb then puts them to work making delicious honey that we can, in fact, use to make tasty meads. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing, and thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Last week, I talked to a fermentation expert, Sandor Katz, on the show, and he gave us tips on fermenting vegetables. That was a really good show. Well, I forgot to talk about my own experience lately with making fermented hot sauce. I did post some pictures on social media. My first successful batch was made using peppers that I bought from our guest today. In fact, Caleb down at the farmer's market here in town. I got habaneros, jalapenos, banana peppers, and cow horns, and cut them all up into 2-quart-sized jars. And I added a little garlic and green onion in there, too. Then I mixed up a brine of around 5% salt. I used 3 tablespoons of sea salt and 1/4 water. And don't be mad, because I didn't do metric and I didn't weigh it. Anyway, a week later, I strained the peppers and blended them up in a blender and added just enough of the brine back in to get the consistency that I was after. And that stuff is awesome. I've got another batch going on right now with my own homegrown habaneros and some hatch peppers that I got at the grocery store, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how that comes out. Sandor and I talked about mold or yeast sometimes forming on the surface of veggie fermentations, and I get an email from Troy in Ripon, California, or is it Ripon, California? Troy says, I've been fermenting veggies for years, and I've tried a few different techniques to prevent mold from growing on the top of vegetables, but sometimes it would still appear. That is until I used my anaerobic sour beer-making experience. Troy says, after the veggies, water, and spices are loaded and ready to ferment, I purge my 1-gallon jar through the airlock grommet with the lid slightly loose, then quickly tighten it and put on the airlock. I've never had mold again, even without the vegetables being fully submerged in the brine. So there you go. Thanks, Troy. Purge your veggies with CO2 and keep that mold away. Did you know our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave over at High Gravity in Tulsa sell stuff for fermenting food, too? Not that beer isn't food, beer and wine, but they've got cheese-making equipment, cultures, mother of vinegar, kombucha starters, and they've got cool 1-gallon and 1/2-gallon glass jars with airlocks in the lid, just like Troy's, and nifty ceramic weights that will help keep your vegetables submerged under the brine. You never know what you'll find at highgravitybrew.com. Beer and wine ingredient kits. If you want to put together your own recipes, the Build Your Own Beer page at highgravitybrew.com is amazing. On one single page, they've got the contents of an entire fully stocked homebrew shop, from grain to hops to adjuncts to yeast. It's all there at highgravitybrew.com. And of course, if you want to enter the excellent world of electric brewing or upgrade your current electric setup, HighGravityBrew.com has a full line of Warthog controllers and systems, as well as other manufacturers, too. I have a Warthog single-vessel system, brew in a bag, but you can also do two or three vessels, from 5 gallons to 2 barrels. HighGravityBrew.com will take the pain out of propane, and if you use the code EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your electric gear purchase. That's at family-owned and operated HighGravityBrew.com. Well, a couple of shows ago, I talked to Chris Colby about CO2, and Chris said his standard practice in replacing room air with CO2 in the headspace of a keg was to purge it 3 times. Well, I got a comment from Adam Ross, head brewer at Twin Span Brewing, whom you heard on this show, defending brown ales a while back. Adam says there is allegedly a research paper from Wienstefen that confirms Chris's theory that purging and venting a keg 3 times will remove pretty much all the O2 in the tank. It's something like purging once gets rid of 75% of the oxygen, twice gets you 98%, and 3 times gets you to 99.9%. Adam says, at Twin Span, I fill my brights with CO2 up to 5 psi and then vent. I do that twice because I don't always have a place to send the CO2 that won't set off the CO2 monitors and require me to evacuate the brew house. Adam says, CO2 is expensive and I'm selling small batches quickly in-house. He says, this paper allegedly exists because it's referenced all over the place online, but I've yet to actually find it. Thanks, Adam. Good to hear from you. If you're once, twice, 3 times a purger, then apparently you're doing pretty good, it seems. By the way, Chris Colby will be back next week to talk about his new hard seltzer book, which is coming out very soon. Let's talk about our friends and sponsors at Tavor. If you listen to this show, you know about Tavor. It's a way to select delicious craft beers you may not be able to find in your area and have them delivered to you. It's not a Beer of the Month club where someone chooses beer for you. You only pay for the beer that you choose over the course of the month. Signing up for Tavor is free. Just create an account at Tavor.com. That's T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, and download their iPhone or Android app. You'll receive notifications for 2 new beers each day that are available for purchase with in-depth tasting notes from Philip at Tavor. This month, Megan at Tavor says, look for selections from Humble Abode, Lumberbeard, Full Circle, and Full City. If you're not interested in the beers you see, no worries. Just skip the ones you don't want. However, when you see something you do want, and you will, don't wait. Just click on it and add it to your crate. Your beer arrives fresh every few weeks, allowing enough time to fill a box and pay the least shipping. Why don't you check it out? It doesn't cost anything to sign up, and there's no obligation to purchase anything. In fact, if I can ask you a favor, go to Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, or download the app, and when you sign up, enter the promo code BASICBREWING, all one word, and you'll get $10 off your first shipment of $25 or more. Again, it's free to sign up, and there is no obligation to purchase. Sign up at Tavor.com or with the Tavor app and use Basic Brewing as the promo code. Okay, as homebrewers, we often want to be as hands-on as we can with our ingredients. We grow our own hops, for example, a lot of us do. So I was very excited to hear about Caleb Hutcherson and being able to get great quality honey just a couple of minutes from my house. So I asked Caleb if he'd talk to me about what it takes to raise our own bees. Caleb Hutcherson, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Where are we at?
So we're located in Prairie Grove at Pick and Peck Farms. This is my family little farm. It's a hobby farm. And we, as you can hear probably around me, I've got bees all around us. I've got 35 hives here, and I've got about 15 in Farmington. So I've got 2 locations set up, and by next spring I'll have over 200 nukes available to sell at the Farmington location. And I'll probably have a few here also just for when people pick up. But we also have 90 hens, laying hens. So we get probably around 45 to 50 eggs a day. So we've got plenty of eggs. We have okra and fresh produce that we sell at the farmer's market. I really got into beekeeping when my mom came home one day and she said, I've got signed up to do some beekeeping, and I would really like for you to learn how to do it, because I'm pretty uncomfortable. I don't want to be around the bees. So I was like, well, I don't want to be around the bees either.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, so I quickly got attached to them when I started doing more research and figuring out kind of their behaviors and what they do for us. They pollinate one third of our food, so it's very important to have them. So I got into beekeeping right off the bat, and I had one hive, and then it quickly grew to seven, and then I had about 15, and then this year I got really into it, and as soon as COVID hit, I got out of school, and I wanted to find something I enjoyed doing for work-wise. I do work for my parents. They do sell real estate at Lindsay. But I wanted to find something I enjoyed. So I got connected with somebody at the Bee Alliance. His name's Jim Pickett. He did all the cutouts and swarm catches around Northwest Arkansas for years. He quit doing it. And I just got to talking to him, and he said, well, I get so many calls a week, and I'll give them all to you. So when they call me, I'll have them call you. Well, it worked out great, and I wound up getting like 20 calls a week. So I was really busy. I found a partner that had been beekeeping for about 16 years, so he had lots of experience. He was just getting back into it. He moved from Oklahoma, and now he's in Colorado, so I lost my partner, so now I'm going solo. But we knocked out probably, I'd say, over 35 together this spring, cutouts or swarm catches. And all the money that we did receive doing cutouts, we used it as a donation to our apiaries. Huh. And we were able to buy boxes, the equipment to house the bees. So I haven't paid hardly anything for what I have, and that was kind of my goal going into next spring, is I can get all these free bees, and I can split them into different hives and sell them for new beekeepers to get started. So that was my main goal going into this.
You said use the word nukes.
Yes.
Earlier. What's a nuke?
So a nuke is a 5-frame hive that is not mature enough to go into a 10-frame just yet. So when, for instance, if I caught a swarm off a tree, I would shake them into a nuke box with frames in it, 5 frames, and I would feed them sugar water, and they would grow that hive into a nucleus, and that would be the main part of a 10 frame once it got started. So what I could do is I could go and take that 5 frame, and I could go put it in a 10 frame, and they could grow it out, and once they got 3 more frames full, I would be able to put another brood box on top, or a super if I chose to use a single chamber brood box.
So if listeners can picture, you've seen the typical white, usually white,
yes,
boxes.
Uh-huh.
So like the bottom part is basically their home.
Yes.
And then the upper parts are sort of warehouses. Is
so,
that the way it works?
So typically, the queen can lay in a super box, pretty much a honey box is what you want to call it, for listeners that don't know beekeeping, where they store their honey. But the brood box is primarily where the queen will lay her eggs. And you can lay a queen excluder where she cannot get up on top where the honey is. So it makes it a lot easier for the beekeeper to know where the queen is at all times. She's going to be in that brood box. But I do not use queen excluders. Hmm. She can go up and move wherever she'd like. You know, it is an extra expense to buy all those extra queen excluders when you have this many hives.
Mm-hmm.
So typically, I'm very gentle. I'm able to get in and do my work and assess them and make sure they're healthy and not have to worry about the queen. So
now, if she lays eggs in the other parts of the boxes, does that affect the quality of the honey, or do you have to?
No, it does not. So you can strain honey so many different ways. you're going to be able to, so say a honey or a hive was honey bound and the queen had laid eggs up top where the honey was, you could go ahead and put it in your extractor, spin it out, and you could go and put those frames back in that hive so she has room to lay her eggs. Yeah. So you can strain the honey. It'd be fine if she did lay her eggs in there. So
you've got now you said cutouts.
Yes.
Now what is it? What is a cutout?
So a cutout is where someone has bees in a location that they are unwanted.
Like their house.
Yes.
Their walls.
Yes. Say their walls of their house or their buildings, their shops. I go in and I perform a cutout, which is where I go in and just cut out where the bees are located. I've got to find them, and I cut out that piece of sheetrock in their wall of their house or the siding. I take off the siding and cut through their house. So that's pretty much it. It's pretty simple once you get the hang of it. You can knock out, I've knocked out 4 or 5 a day. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just really fast pace, and you can knock them out pretty quick once you get used to it.
Wow. And a swarm is like somebody calls up and they've got a swarm on their fence post.
Yes.
Or their plants or their trees.
Absolutely.
Or whatever. And it's like, what do I do?
Yes. So definitely, I always tell people if they see a swarm, contact a beekeeper. You don't have to contact me, but I do recommend call a beekeeper because they're going to be able to manage them. They're going to be able to save them and use them for benefits.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah, it's always nice to have bees.
So you're collecting bees. You're getting free bees.
Yep, free bees. That's kind of my goal.
Nobody says, "Hey, I want the bees after you take them out of my house." And
mm-hmm. Yep.
Now you did a pretty dramatic extraction or cutout, and it's on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Of Old Main. If you look at the University of Arkansas logo, Old Main is the big main building on campus. And talk about the extraction that you did there.
Yes, so it's a very historic building. It so a lot went into it. There was a lot of teams that had to approve everything that went on with that. They had to get a lift that went up 7 stories high, and that was about $1,000 a day. So the process was kind of lengthy, but they had to hurry up and get the job done so they weren't sitting with a lift that cost $1,000 a day. So they called me in and I went over there and assessed the hive and found out where they were, and we went in full bore and got them cut out, and we extracted over 100 pounds of honey in that hive.
Wow.
It was absolutely amazing, and if you hadn't seen the video, it's worth watching, because that honey, you don't ever see honeycomb like that. That's the biggest honey extraction I've done this year, and it was awesome.
Well, not only, I mean, if you're a little easily triggered, you know, there's a warning there, because not only are there bees flying all around, if you have a fear of bees, but if you have a fear of heights, you're on this extender thing.
Yes.
That, it's not, is it 7 feet? It's not seven.
Well,
stories.
So
but
it goes,
it's capable of going,
yes,
seven stories, but
yeah.
you're like 4 stories in there.
Yeah. We were up about 65 to 70 feet.
Well, okay. That's 7 stories.
Yeah. We had harnesses on. We were actually very comfortable. I didn't have a problem being up there at all.
Oh, man.
I actually enjoyed
it. Did it wiggle?
It did. Yeah. With three people up there, I had a cameraman. I had, which was my partner, Averin. And then I had a University of Arkansas employee up there also. So if you moved, it would definitely sway a little bit, but it was pretty safe. I actually felt very comfortable. I was able to do the job and get out of there.
Well, that's amazing.
Yes.
So you get these hives, or you get these swarms and the cutouts, and you put them in your boxes.
Yes.
You know, you kind of tame them.
Absolutely.
What is the process like? I mean, how is it to take care of bees? How much work is it to take care of them?
There's a lot of time that goes into caring for bees, especially during cutout season. What I do is when I go to a cutout, I come prepared and I bring pretty much a hive body with me, and five or six empty frames, just depending on how big I think the hive is inside there and how long it's been there. But I will cut out that comb and that brood that she has laid her eggs on, and I will put it in the frames, and I'll rubber band it, and I'll set it back into the brood box with bees on it, and then I will drive home, and I will dump the rest of the bees in there that I've vacuumed off, and it's like they never even left their hive.
Huh.
Yeah.
And you use like a shop vac to.
I do, yes. So get the bees. I have a bee vac is what it's called, and it's got a cage in this 7-gallon bucket that has a tube connected to it, and I'm able to vacuum them off.
Huh.
So.
And then once they're settled, once they're in the, and I guess the first, how long does it take until they get established and start making honey? After they're moved into their new home.
So after they're moved, I'm not really sure. It just depends on the time of the year and if there's a honey flow. I typically do feed them once they get home. I'll get a mason jar and I'll get an entrance feeder and I'll feed them for a few days to make sure
sugar
that,
water.
Yeah, so that it makes sure that they're comfortable and they're not going to starve, because I mean that's a lot of bees, and when you take their honey out of their hive, it can really stress them out and do damage. So.
And that's their nutrition. So you got to keep that in mind.
Absolutely, and they're changing locations too. So they haven't really figured this area out yet. They don't know anything about it. So once you put them in that box, then they've got to figure it out. But their survival is very, very neat to watch. I mean, they thrive in this location. We have the lake up here. We've got so many gardens and flower gardens and everything. So
yeah. So there's a lot of talk about you know, the bees being in trouble and the bee populations being down.
Yes.
But it sounds like Northwest Arkansas is doing pretty good.
Yeah, Northwest Arkansas is booming with bees right now. It's crazy, and there's not a lot of people that do what I do, which I'm okay with. It gives me more business, and but it's doing great here in Northwest Arkansas. Colony collapse disorder has played effect in a lot of beekeepers' hives, and that's one thing I definitely look for. I don't want that to happen here. Mm-hmm. I haven't had that happen here, thankfully. I have had a few swarm on me, but that's just life, you know. Bees are going to swarm. So that's, I've only had about two or three swarm on me this year.
Now, what's that mean when a hive swarms?
So when you keep them in a... When I keep them in a nuc too long, they run out of room for her to lay, and so they need to swarm somewhere else. And typically, they swarm on our okra, they swarm on our tomato plants, so I'm able to get them back into a new box. So pretty much, I get to split them in a different way from changing frames to another box.
So that's another thing that beekeepers have to look out for, is they got to make sure that they have plenty of space.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
As long as they have plenty of space and plenty of food and all that, do they pretty much stay in place, or is there a periodic time that swarms just happen?
Yeah, so swarm season is from March all the way up to, I mean, I caught a swarm yesterday. So it can go into late September.
Wow.
Yeah. So it goes for a good period of time. And, I mean, I get calls for cutouts even late November. So, yeah.
And I guess, do you have to handle the bees differently if it's cold outside, you know, if it's past the season when you're moving them? Or is it more risk
of being stressed? I definitely recommend to the people that have them in their homes at that time that if these aren't bothering you, I definitely recommend me coming back when it's warmer, because when it's cold outside, they can't survive that long. They've got to keep their temperature of their hive balanced. And they do a great job of that. They fan their wings and keep it the temperature they need to survive in the cold weather.
Burn that sugar.
Yeah, they do, yeah. So, well, they eat their honey for energy, and that gives them enough energy to fan their wings and keep that temperature going.
Now, you're talking to mostly homebrewers all around the world, you know, and hobbyists, and so, you know, we like to get into different things. So if you're thinking about getting into beekeeping, what are some things that you got to think about? Yeah. What's the equipment that you need to get into? What's the best sources of information?
Yeah, so definitely when you want to think about starting beekeeping, you've got to make sure you have room for them. You can't just like have a small backyard and throw a couple beehives back there. First off, you've got to check your POA and make sure that you've got the rules of your neighborhood situated, and make sure that you've got the experience. So you've got to do your homework on these bees. You've got to know what to look for. You've got to know what a queen is. You've got to know what a drone is. You've got to know what a worker bee is, and you've got to know how to find eggs. So you've got to do your homework before you decide to get bees. And then once you do your homework, go to an online store or your local beekeeping shop and talk to them, interact with them, and find out how you can get started in a group. There's always beekeeping groups around your areas. Find a beekeeper, find a mentor that can come and help you set up the bees once you have your boxes in place. And that's exactly what I did. Earl Rowe, he lives probably a mile from me, and he's a master beekeeper. He got me set up right here in this backyard, and we were able to put the nuke of bees that I had just gotten into a 10-frame hive, and I started feeding them immediately, and they grew and grew and grew, and then I put was able to put 3 supers on top and harvest 2 supers of honey my first year.
Wow.
So honey production is very good. But when you start beekeeping, you definitely need to know the information first. You don't want to just dive in and try and learn as you go, because you're going to fail and you're going to waste your money, because bees are expensive. The prices of bees are going up big time. Back in 2011, I looked, and from 2006 to 2011, a nuke of bees was about $180 to $100, and now they're up to $180.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And the boxes to house them in is anywhere from $215 to $350.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it gets very expensive. If you're a carpenter and you know how to build your own boxes, then I definitely recommend that. It's a lot cheaper way to go. But what I do is when I perform a cutout and get these free bees, I do accept a donation of a minimum of $250 so I can house these bees. And I go over to Sam at Hiveright in Prairie Grove, and he has his own he has his own bee work business. Huh. So he has all the equipment for me, and I call him and he has it ready for me to pick up, and I'm able to come home and put them up and be done with it. So I don't have to worry about that. So it's very nice.
It's everything's easy once you know how to do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Once you figure it out, it's step by step. So
you use the term super. So there are different sizes of boxes that you put on top of the main. So talk about how much honey can you expect to get out of each of these?
Well, it varies just depending on how the weather is in the spring and going into the summer. You can have anywhere from, let's say, you can take roughly 12 gallons off a hive. Or if it's a first year hive, I don't recommend taking much. If you do, it gives them more food and more energy going into the winter, and they can survive the winter. And once they survive through the winter, it's easy from there. You're able to stack them boxes up. I mean, just stack them up. I mean, six or seven high.
Wow. Wow. So
you're going to be able to get more honey out of your next year if you just leave them alone. And with my young hives, I don't take anything off of them. I've got probably 15 hives that I take honey off of, and I leave it at that. I don't try and take them off my first year hive if I can.
So you said 10 to 12 gallons, is that right?
10 to 12 gallons.
And each, I weighed, I bought a quart of honey off you the other day to make a mead with. Mm-hmm. And I weighed that, and the quart was like 3 pounds.
Yep, about 3 pounds.
So 3 pounds times 4 times 10, that's that's how many pounds of honey. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of honey.
Yeah.
So once you collect the honey, how do you collect the honey, and what kind of equipment do you need there?
Yeah, so to collect the honey, you'll need some type of scraper to cut out the wax cappings once you remove the supers or the deep frames that have honey in them. You'll need an extractor, in which you can go to your beekeeping group and ask to borrow one. Typically they'll say, yes, you need to call this person. They have it. You can pick it up, for free. Or you can buy your own.
Now, is that extractor, is that kind of like a centrifuge kind of a thing?
Yeah.
Spin the honey out?
I have a 2-frame extractor. I haven't upgraded my extractor yet. I'm kind of tight, so I like to save my money for rainy days, because you never know.
Smart.
Yeah, but I use a 2-frame extractor. You don't need anything really more than that. I mean, I have over 50 hives and I have a 2-frame extractor, so it's a longer time to extract, but then again, you're not spending $1,500 on a big extractor. Eventually, yes, I will need a bigger extractor, but that's next year. But anyway, you'll need an extractor, you'll need a scraping tool, you'll need a food grade bucket to let the honey strain into, and some type of sieve or
some kind of filtering device.
Yes, you'll need. You can even use pantyhose if you'd like, or cheesecloth. I use cheesecloth a lot when I do my cutouts. That comb goes into cheesecloth, and then I squeeze it out into a bowl, and it does pretty well.
Huh. When I was a kid, we used to get the honey jars with the honeycomb in it. We used to eat the honeycomb.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I do sell honeycomb at the first of the year, and then I let them have it and draw out that honeycomb for next year.
Huh.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the year, I have probably around, this year I had around probably 100 jars with honeycomb in it, and I've gotten a lot of attention off that, and a lot of people want it, but I sold out really quick. But I've just got to give them time to draw out that comb again, and fill it up with honey. So it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have specific frames for that. You just can't have plastic foundation frames to get honeycomb out of. You have to let them draw it out on a single frame, and you can get a wax starter for them, or you can get fishing line and run it through the frames, and they can draw it down, and then you can cut it out into little honeycombs and drop it into the pint jars or quart jars.
Huh.
Yeah, just depending on what size you prefer.
And how many times do you harvest a hive every year?
So it's either once or twice a year per hive. Some are different, some are stronger, and produce a lot more honey. It just depends on the size of your hive and the population of bees. So the most I've extracted from a hive this year is 3 tons.
Wow.
So yeah, you can extract pretty good amounts of honey.
And once it gets cold, you get the season off, or is there still maintenance that has to happen?
The first of September, I don't extract it again. I let them have it, and I leave them plenty of honey. I don't necessarily need a lot of honey from my first year hives. But I expect a little bit more out of my older hives that I've had for 3 years. So
yeah,
they do a great job. I mean, if you just let them go the first year without taking much honey, I mean, you can take a frame or two. That's not going to hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
But just for personal use and not to sell yet. And if you do that, then you're going to have so much honey, you're not going to know what to do with it. You're going to be giving it for Christmas presents. You're going to be selling it to your coworkers. So it's a fun time harvesting honey.
And you've got mostly wildflowers out here. Uh-huh. You know, you've got some vegetable garden here. So the honey that I tasted it and. I thought it was fairly neutral, you know, kind of a wildflower honey. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big expert on honey flavors, but, you know, definitely different honeys taste different depending on where they are. But I thought, and it may have been that I'd bought some peppers off y'all too, mm-hmm. that I thought there was a little bit of a peppery, like a, you know, bell peppery note in there too, but I let my wife taste it and she didn't taste that. So I mean, could be power of suggestion.
Yeah. Definitely. The honey that I harvested the first of the year is clover honey. It was a lighter golden color, which I like. I do really, really like the darker honey, though, towards the end of summer and after spring. And that's more wildflower honey. And you can even put clover honey and wildflower honey together and mix them.
Mm.
And which is really good. So, and that's what I had just given you a minute ago.
Oh, nice.
About, yeah.
Nice.
So I hope you enjoy that.
Yeah. I feel another mead come
on. Yeah,
on.
You can even put it in your tea, too, if you like.
We have to get you hooked up with Steve Wilkes at the homebrew shops. Get you making some mead as well.
Yeah, I would love to learn that. that's definitely been on the bucket list, so I'd like that.
The plastic food grade bucket list.
Yeah, exactly. I would love to learn how to make some mead for sure.
Yeah, we'll fix you up.
Okay.
Well, this has been fun. Any other words of sage words of advice before we shut her down?
Yeah, definitely. When you see a swarm, call a beekeeper, and even ask a beekeeper for help if you're getting into beekeeping. Beekeepers love to help others. You know, you're helping the bees, and people love to help the bees, so just ask somebody for help if you need it. Don't feel ashamed if you've got to ask somebody for help, because that's what happens a lot, is they just don't want to ask people for help. And typically, if the bees are having a problem, you can find the solution. You know, bees take care of themselves primarily, but they definitely need a beekeeper. So if you see a swarm, call them. They're going to help you. If you want to get into beekeeping, you can get a hold of me, and I'd love to even help you. So
awesome.
Yeah.
You may be getting some emails. and where can people find you on Facebook and
Instagram?
Yeah,
so I have a Facebook page. It's Caleb's Bees, C's Bees for short. And on Instagram, I have C's Bees as well. So you can find me on there. And I'm located in Prairie Grove, Arkansas. At 11013 Bob Kidd Lake Road, and I'm pretty much always here. And if I'm not here, I'm either catching a swarm or I've gone hunting or fishing. So
there you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, Caleb.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks again to Caleb. I shot video of Caleb opening up some hives and showing off the honey for an upcoming video episode, and neither one of us got stung. Even though the bees were very active. Pretty amazing. If you go to YouTube and search for Old Main Bees, you can see that video of Caleb removing that enormous hive at the University of Arkansas way up in the air. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks, everybody, supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio, is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.